I'm going to be looking at another story from David this evening. Begin by saying that this is an interesting study, and I think an important study, and it's one that I'm going to maybe offer some thoughts that you may not have heard before, and that you can read different thoughts on, but I pray that you'll consider the things that I say about these verses from 1 Samuel 21, and also we're going to look at Matthew 21 and Mark chapter, or Matthew 12 and Mark chapter 2. And I believe that what I'm saying is the accurate way of looking at these verses, and you'll understand more about that in a moment. Even though it's maybe not the most common way of looking at these verses. This is a tough issue, and at first the question is going to seem like an obvious answer. But are there times when violating God's law is justifiable? The obvious answer, I think, is no, there shouldn't be times. Yet, we often hear arguments, if we get down and think about it, where we have people rationalize that there are times when we are justified in doing wrong or violating some aspect of God's law. There are, in fact, this is often called the issue of situational ethics, where the situation determines the best ethic or behavior. Situation ethics is the notion that there is no absolute rules governing right or wrong, rather all human activity is determined by the situation of the moment. And in Christianity, it may go like this, that there is a higher law of love, mercy, and justice that at times might mean that we should violate the lower law, as it is said, of some type of commandment. So this gets us to our story. Now that I've confused you, we'll go to the story, and I think we can make some understanding. 1 Samuel 21. Let's read our passage. David came to Nob to Ahimelech, the priest, and Ahimelech came to meet David, trembling, and said to him, "Why are you alone, and no one with you?" And David said to Ahimelech, the priest, "The king has charged me with the matter and said to me, 'Let no one know anything of the matter about which I send you, with which I have charged you. I have made an appointment with the young men for such and such a place.' Now then, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread and whatever is here." And the priest answered David, "I have no common bread on hand, but there is holy bread, if the young men have kept themselves from women." David answered the priest, "Truly women have been kept from us, as always when we are on an expedition. The vessels of the young men are holy, even when it is an ordinary journey. How much more today will their vessels be holy?" So the priest gave him the holy bread, for there was no bread there but the bread of the presence, which is removed from before the Lord, so to be replaced by hot bread on the day it is taken away. Notice, if you read the larger context, David is not really on a mission from Saul. He actually deceives the priest, and he actually tells a lie here. He's actually fleeing from Saul, running for his life. And he goes to this, to the house of God, to the priest, and he asks for this bread. This is the bread of the presence, the showbread, as some of the older versions say, which is put out on the Sabbath and is set there before the Lord for 7 days. And then after 7 days, the priests take that bread off, and the priests, the sons of Aaron, it says in the law of Moses, are allowed to eat that bread. Common men are not allowed to eat that, and they put new bread out. But David asked to eat it, and the priests will consent because David says he's either on a special mission for the king or because his men are very hungry, and he feels like it's the merciful thing to do. There was no common bread. Now, Leviticus 24, 5 through 9 is a reference about this bread being set out for 7 days and who could eat it and things. And then the priest would give him the holy bread. What I'm not going to spend much time on, but to fill in the rest of the story, there's another man there, Doeg, the Edomite, who is there part of a consecration exercise, and he sees David. He works for the king. He's one of the king's workers. And he actually goes and tells the king he knows where David is. And the priests have aided him. And Saul goes and will actually murder, have killed these priests that are there. And so they will lose their life through this endeavor. Now the predominant view is that David's act of eating the holy bread was not lawful. It's not the right thing to do. But was justifiable because of his desperate hour of need. The priest was right in having mercy upon him and his men. This is similar to other stories. We see this with Rahab. Rahab does something that is not lawful. She lies about the spies being in her home. It's not a lawful act, but some will say that is justifiable in that it's the best thing to do because she's protecting the spies. We can think about other issues of where someone, basically this has to do with other scenarios, can be wide and far. We can think about a scenario where someone is very hungry, and that kind of goes with this story here. And they're very hungry, and because of that desperate need, maybe even to feed their children, they will either steal or lie or deceive in order to get food. Something that's unlawful, but some would say justifiable. It is something that can be done. And at other times, it's looked upon as we as Christians, we're supposed to follow the commandments of the Bible, but at times we should maybe overlook those commandments if it means loving our fellow man, having mercy on our fellow man. So, for example, in our day and age, 21st century culture, some people say, well, we understand that not everybody worships the way the Bible teaches, but we also should act upon the higher law of love and mercy and not restrict or require things about the lower law, some of the commandments about how we should worship, observation of the Lord's Supper or singing, things of that nature, or even regarding the plan of salvation. Now, this is the predominant view regarding how David did it. Now let's go to Matthew chapter 12. So this gets even a little more interesting because our Lord is going to use this passage. And let's see what Jesus says, because it doesn't matter what 150 or 100,000 commentators say. What Jesus says always trumps them, right? So Jesus is going to give us an inspired commentary on David in Matthew 12. Now let me tell you, Mark chapter 2 is also the parallel account, but I'm going to spend most of my time in Matthew, just save us turning back and forth. They're very similar in what they say. Matthew's a little longer. Mark will add just a little bit. Let's read Matthew 12. At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and his disciples were hungry. And they began to pluck heads of grain and to eat. But when the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, "Look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath." He said to them, "Have you not read what David did when he was hungry, and those who were with him, how he entered the house of bread and ate the bread of the presence, which it is not lawful for him to eat, nor for his priests who were with him, but only for the priest." Excuse me, not only for those who were with him, but only for the priest. "Or have you not read in the law how the Sabbath, the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are guiltless? I tell you, something greater than the temple is here. And if you had known what this means, 'I desire mercy and not sacrifice,' you would not have commanded or condemned the guiltless. For the Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath." Notice the story here. His disciples are plucking grain on the Sabbath. This is an accusation made by the Pharisees that they're violating the Old Testament Sabbath laws. What's actually the case, and what the Pharisees are actually making the case, is that they're violating their man-made traditional laws regarding the Sabbath. In other words, they're not violating the law of Moses, but they're violating the Pharisaical law that has been built up. They had 39 or more additional laws related just to the Sabbath day. And one of those, because they were trying, the idea was, we don't want to violate the law. So let's build a fence around the law and add a lot more things to it, so that way if we stay beyond the fence, we'll never get close to violating the law. You see their logic? And so they had come up with a bunch of rules so that we don't get close to working on the Sabbath. And one of those rules had to do with plucking grain. And so they're not violating the Mosaical law, the Old Testament, but they're violating the law of the Pharisees, which Jesus does not authorize. But notice what Jesus says here. Jesus is going to defend his disciples and refers to David in doing so. He does not condone David's unlawful action, and does he give us a principle that situational ethics is good and right? The common position, and once again, I guess I've often thought this as well, at least struggle with this passage, is that Jesus approves David's actions and justifies his disciples' actions because mercy trumps law-keeping when there's a justifiable need. And as it's often stated, people are more important than laws. Let me be careful about this and say that, first of all, that might be in some ways the right position, but I think we want to be very careful about that. And that's the common position that's taken in most commentators that I looked at, very conservative guys in the church, and even some progressive guys in the church, or those out of the church even. And I would also mention that I do want to always emphasize that people are more important than laws, but we need to be careful in taking that statement too far, don't we? In that we can denigrate the laws of Christ and make them not important, and we really can have a license to do whatever we want if we can come up with a need of serving someone. Now, let's look at this again, though. Notice this common position. Jesus approves David's actions and justifies his disciples' actions because mercy trumps law-keeping. I think that that is a wrong interpretation of the passage. I think Jesus is really saying David's actions were unlawful. Read it again closely with me. Notice he says to them, "Have you not read what David did when he was hungry and those who were with him? How he entered the house of God and the bread of the presence, which was not lawful for him to eat." What does Jesus say as an inspired son of God about David's actions? He says it wasn't lawful. It wasn't the right thing to do. David did two wrongs on that occasion. David lied, and then David ate the bread he wasn't authorized to eat. Now, why is then Jesus using this example? Well, it seems that Jesus is using this in that he's making an argument designed to show the hypocrisy of the Pharisees. And if you stay with me, you will understand the hypocrisy he's doing. The Pharisees did not condemn David, who actually did what was unlawful. David ate the bread he was not authorized to eat. Yet they were willing to put David up on a pedestal, yet they're condemning his disciples for doing something that was truly lawful, that violated no Old Testament law. You see, Jesus is, through this whole passage, is pointing out the hypocrisy of the Pharisees. They were being hypocritical, prejudiced, and inconsistent. On the one hand, they condemned the disciples who were innocent, but they revered David who was guilty. So rather than using this passage, see, here's the key idea. How is David using the passage? He's not using the passage to say, "Hey, look, David did it. My disciples can do it," which is the way we typically read it and think he's doing it. But I don't think that's what he's saying. I think he's rather saying, "David did it. He was wrong. Yet you guys say he's right, and you're condemning my guys for doing what's really not wrong." And so he's pointing out the inconsistency of these Pharisees. Jesus will go a step farther in that he challenges, or he would mention, that not all labor on the Sabbath is
that the Old Testament teaches that some labor on the Sabbath is authorized, Matthew 12:5. He then will say, have you not read in the law how the Sabbath, the priest in the temple profane the Sabbath and are guiltless? What he means there is the Old Testament requires the priest to do work on the Sabbath. You see what he's saying? You guys are being inconsistent. You guys are being hypocritical in your judgment. In other words, you're not judging because you really care about God. You're judging because you don't like me. You're just trying to find something to pin on me and my disciples. This is not about doing what's right. And isn't that really what often prejudice is about? The third thing Jesus will say is Jesus will challenge the attitude and heart of the Pharisees. Look at verse number 7. Well, let me comment on verse 6. So he points out that they had to work in the Sabbath. The priests had to work. And then he says, verse 6, something greater than the temple is here. In other words, Jesus is the temple. And if his disciples were eating on the Sabbath, then that is permissible because they are doing the work of Jesus. But then verse 7, if you had known what this means, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the guiltless. He quotes from Hosea chapter 6, verse 6. And in Hosea, the issue is the prophet striking a blow against the mere external, superficial, and ritualistic observation of some of the laws. In other words, just going through the motions and not having the heart. If you look at Matthew chapter 15, this is what Jesus will talk to the Pharisees about later on. When he says, for example, in verse 4, when God commanded them to honor father and mother, whoever reviles father and mother must surely die. But you say, if anyone tells his father or mother, what you would have gained from me is given to God, he need not honor his father. In other words, they had built up ways of getting out of doing the commandments. In other words, if we give to God, then we don't have to keep the commandment of honoring our father and mother because we've given to God. And Jesus says about that, you hypocrites. For the sake of the tradition, you have made void the word of God. Verse 6, verse 7, you hypocrites. Isaiah wrote about you, these people honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. Jesus challenges their attitude and their heart. Notice this quote, that's such a famous quote. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. Notice he's not saying he does not want sacrifice, that he doesn't want obedience as it's commonly understood. He doesn't say he doesn't want us to obey, but he's saying he doesn't care if we do the outward obedience and our heart is not there. In other words, he's saying he wants our heart and our outward obedience. The Pharisees were really good at the outward obedience, but their heart was wrong. And Jesus is saying, you guys are so judgmental that you have missed the point. Jesus challenges the attitude of their hearts. He wanted mercy with sacrifices. Eternal motive, internal motive, and attitude are just as important as external actions. And then the last thing that Jesus says in verse number 7 or verse 8, for the Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath. I created the Sabbath. I am the master of the Sabbath, if you will. The Sabbath works for my purposes. Now, in Mark's account, he said that the Sabbath was made for man, not the other way around. In other words, not man for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was created for the purpose of man resting. But the Pharisees have turned it all around and they made it a burden. The commandments of God are made for our benefit, not to be just twisted and abused and put a burden upon us. So Jesus claimed to be the Lord of the Sabbath. They missed God's intention and they missed his heart. The Sabbath was to serve humanity. It was not supposed to be a restriction and burden upon man. Now, what's the application for us? Well, if we have properly interpreted this,
then here are some applications. Number one, our culture is skewed toward mercy and love over obedience and doctrine. We just have to recognize that our natural reading of the text is, because of our culture and because of all the emphasis we have in our culture, it seems that we're naturally going to read it with a skewed lens, it seems, toward mercy and love. Now, I don't want to be misunderstood, because Jesus will tell these Pharisees later that they have emphasized the lesser matters of the law and they needed to do the weightier matters of the law, love, grace, and mercy. But Jesus also tells them at that occasion not to neglect the others as well. But our culture emphasizes mercy and love over obedience and over doctrine and truth. Jesus taught us to love one another, and Jesus certainly loved us. Jesus was about mercy. James tells us that if we don't extend mercy to others, no mercy will be given to us. But our world tends to be out of balance in this regard, with the opposite scale being obedience and doctrine. In other words, yes, mercy and grace and love is important. But when we read the Bible, we also need to understand that obedience, truth, love, and wrath are also very important biblical concepts. And so Jesus taught all of these concepts. The second application I would say is that Jesus' teachings must be studied carefully. When we typically read, as I mentioned, Matthew 12, it's easy for us just to read, oh yeah, Jesus is saying David, though he wasn't legal in doing it, was justifiable. Therefore, my disciples who are not legal in doing it are justifiable. But you got a lot of issues there going on, right? His disciples really aren't breaking the law. David really did break the law. And Jesus isn't excusing David's actions. Jesus is really saying David's actions were wrong. And so just a casual reading often gives you the wrong understanding. And folks, I know some of you that are much older than me would say this. The more you read and study the famous and the common passages of Jesus, you see how intricate and deep they truly are. I mean, Jesus speaks to the common man, and Jesus speaks very simple truths. But Jesus' teachings are also, especially the more we study and look at them, they're often very deep and profound as well. And sometimes we need to realize that we've got to study a little more and consider those other options instead of just taking a surface reading. So we need to study his teachings carefully, understand the context and the argument that Jesus is making. Jesus is making an argument to those Pharisees. We need to understand that. The next application, and maybe this is the most important, there is no justifiable reason for us to willingly violate God's law. There's just no reason that I can understand for us to willingly violate a law of God. Now, I know you can come up with some scenarios, and a God might even appreciate sometimes some of the thought behind that, maybe protection of family or some other type of thing that we're doing. And I'm not, those are issues that are often difficult, but we need to stick to this basic principle that something that is intrinsically wrong, it is wrong in and of itself. Lies, adultery, all the kinds of, you know, dishonesty, all those kind of things. This issue here of breaking a law of God like David did, he violated a law of God, that is a sin. And if we start going down the path of situation ethics, which it's easy to do, then we really open up the floodgate to our own subjectivity. It makes man the defining element of when something is right or wrong. So if someone who is hungry has the right to steal, or someone who can't pay their house mortgage or pay their electric bill has the right to just take a little bit of money from work, or someone who thinks the government isn't using the money properly, for example, may even be doing things that are immoral, like abortion or supporting those things, therefore we can be dishonest on our taxes, what's tomorrow, April 15th, then we can justify it. Folks, we can't go down that path. We then can allow ourselves to get out of suffering, to get out of hardship, and we can rationalize and come up with about any reason of why we should be able to cheat on this test, of why we should be able to tell this lie, why we should be able to do this action, because there can be, and we can surely find it, some good, some mercy, some love, some honorable rationale of why we're doing it. And it's happened many times, hadn't it? Yet, we must come back to this answer. Subjectivity can never be the standard for human conduct. All the ways of man, as Proverbs says, are clean in his own eyes. If the situation ethics is valid, there is no act under heaven that cannot be justified. You know, we can even come up with ideas of like, I'm going to stop attending worship or being a part of a church family, but I'm going to spend my time with the poor on Sundays. We can come up with, I mentioned all kinds of things about dishonesty or other issues. We can list a lot of those, and it can be even applied to our fellowship with other groups or to our beliefs about salvation. Remember the last thing I would say about our application is that remember our attitude and our heart. Remember our attitude and our heart. Worship is to be what? In spirit, right attitude, and in truth, right actions. There is not a strong tension between the heart, our mind, our heart, and our actions with our hands. What Jesus is saying is not that we are permissible in doing whatever we want. If it will go with the higher issues of love and mercy and kindness, but rather that we should have love, mercy, and kindness while we're doing God's law. And that if we're doing God's law like the Pharisees, where we want to take our Bibles out and figure out what everybody's doing wrong and beat them over the head with it, that's when we need to come back to what the Pharisees needed to learn. God desires mercy as well as, is really the concept, as well as sacrifice. And so remember our attitude and our heart. Well, this lesson has been a little different, but I think it's been a good study. Before I close, let me say that I mentioned a lot of commentaries out there take the prevalent position, but I appreciate my friend Eric Lyons and some of his help on this lesson. He has a good article on it, did Jesus condone lawbreaking? Dave Miller has a good article called Situationism at apologeticspress.com. That's where Eric's is too. And Wayne Jackson has two good articles, did Jesus endorse situation ethics? And did Jesus violate the Sabbath? Both of those at christiancourier.com. And so I appreciate their work, and I'll give you those for further reading or resources. If you're here this evening and you're not a child of God, we want you to know that we love you, but we also want you to know that you have a responsibility of obeying God's law and obeying God's will. And whatever you might be saying, this is a justifiable reason of why I'm not responding to the gospel. You might be saying it's maybe because I'm not good enough, or it may be saying some other reason. I just got to wait. Don't think that there's any rational, justifiable reason for not responding to the gospel of God. Your mind might be telling you it's right. But remember what Proverbs says. A man in his own eyes thinks rightly, but it's in his own eyes. It's not in the eyes of God. If you need to respond, come as together we stand and sing.
Walk with him.